This is our last official podcast from Bariloche, from Argentina, from South America, and we're going to get supernatural about Chichen Itza in Mexico.
Welcome to From Someplace New, the long-term travel podcast where Karen Bernhardt and John Sumpel discuss their hows and whys, lows and highs, and lessons learned while living abroad.
Welcome to episode 22 of From Someplace New. I'm John Sumpel.
I'm Karen Bernhardt.
Yeah, and this is our last episode in South America. Central America, Mexico, North America. We're moving off of this vertical line.
It's really happening.
Yeah.
We are counting down the hours for our departure to truly someplace new.
Yes. We are off to Edinburgh, Scotland.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's so going exciting. To be quite the epic journey.
Yes. Are we talking about that first? Or?
Yeah, let's talk about that first.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But first.
Yeah. This episode is going to be a travel story about an experience that I had when we went to Chichen Itza that was something that has never happened to me before in my life. But before we get into that, so what's the best thing that happened to you this week?
I was thinking about this before we sat down to do this, and the best thing was the feeling I had today packing again. It felt like being a traveler again, the way we'd been for the last 2 years, and I had such a spring in my step and felt like such a great sense of momentum and just energized by gathering and packing and that process that we've done dozens of times now. We're doing it again. It just felt great.
I know. I could tell. You've gone from being kind of meh.
It's been tough. It's a lull, and we've talked about in the podcast. We've tried to, look at the bright side and make the most of it, and not struggle with this too much. Because what can you do? Just accept the reality of it. It's been really tough to take a major break from what we'd been doing travel wise. So it just felt really good to be in that zone again today, just pulling everything together and prepping and knowing that it's imminent now for us to be leaving.
Yeah, and we usually move every month, once every month, six weeks, and it's been 5 months.
Which comes around pretty quick.
It's been 5 months.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been like, how do we pack again?
We could have technically moved 4 or 5 times already. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the amount of time that we've been in this one apartment in this one city.
We are definitely not used to sedentary travel.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is the best thing. I mean, just that complete jolt and just energizing feeling I had getting ready today.
And the best thing that happened to me was that I had a call on Friday with a web designer to help us finish the website that has been in construction.
Because you had already done quite a bit of the legwork.
Yep.
I helped a little bit, but it's something that you were much more comfortable with. So you had started this in earnest when we were in San Miguel, I would say, Mexico.
But I got it to the point of, I'm a perfectionist, and I got it as far as I could without having to do a deep dive and teaching myself how to do what needed still to be done. And I just never had the time to do that, and it just got pushed aside. But now we're dialing it in.
Yeah.
Gonna get it done.
So there's some momentum with
that
as well.
Yeah.
And I'm super excited about that because there's many things we want to do with the website, of course. But a big chunk of it will be your photography.
Mm-hmm.
And as most people probably know who are listening to this and those who don't, John is an awesome photographer. He's been doing this for years and years, has a beautiful eye, takes fantastic photos. And I am super jazzed for you to have a platform to be sharing more of your
babes.
Of your photography.
Thanks for your support.
Yeah. No, it's sincere. It's one of your many, many gifts. So I can't wait for that to be a place to share more photos.
So let's talk about our travel so that we can jump into Chichen Itza.
Chichen Itza.
Mystery.
Why are we
supernatural?
Saying it like that?
No,
I don't think anybody talks about it.
I really can't wait to talk about this.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about this.
Yeah,
because
it's a fascinating
something that
place.
was pretty profound, and we'll get into it in a second. I've teased it now a couple times.
Yeah, you have.
So the travel journey we're about to start.
Okay, guys, so buckle up. We're going to go through this step by step, how we've gotten to the point where we are today, where we will be leaving Bariloche on Monday morning.
It's Saturday night. We're recording this. We leave. We have, well, it took us a while to get to this point. And what we had to do to get ready to leave on Monday required us to secure overland travel from Bariloche to Buenos Aires. To do that, though, you had to secure an overland travel permit. To get that permit, you needed permission from the government. To get that permission from the government, we had to get a letter from the U.S. Embassy. To get that letter from the U.S. Embassy, we needed to know the route, the driver, the car, all of this information needed to be submitted so that they knew at every step of the way what route we were taking and that we would never deviate from that. And the transport company that we're working with took care of a majority of that.
We had to mention how you ended up, or we ended up working with that company. That was kind of a serendipitous thing.
Yeah, it was the beauty of social media.
Right.
I hopped onto this Facebook page that we became members of, and it's called Travel Off Path Community. And there's a lot of people who have been communicating during this about their attempts to travel again. So these are people who have been, you know, stranded or locked down and haven't been able to travel and looking for places to go to once things
globally
open up.
Yes, global anything travelers. That's yeah. possible. So I put
something in there about our journey and asked if anybody had any input about overland travel from Bariloche to Buenos Aires, and lo and behold, someone said, oh, I know somebody who just did that last month. The person said, I'll PM you. PM me the person's contact name. I reached out to her. She was a huge help, gave us a whole bunch of information.
Awesome. Yeah.
Reached out to the company that she used, set us all up. It was awesome. So the beauty of social media and connecting with strangers.
It was a recommendation that led to us organizing.
And
I
have become friends with that person now too.
Mm-hmm. She's
and
really interesting.
She may be, Sneha, if you're listening to this episode, hello.
And thank you.
And thank you so much for your help in getting that done. So that was like the first step. We kind of, after we had secured our flights, that was a very important step. That locked everything in. That meant we could move on. So that means we have a car. So the car is a 19-hour drive from Bariloche to the hotel outside of the airport.
Did you all hear that? It's 19 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. I've processed it, but just now I had another moment with it where I was like, oh my goodness, 19 hours in the car.
Yeah, so we leave here at 10 a.m. Monday morning. We should arrive outside the airport around 5 a.m.
Yes.
And our flight doesn't leave until the following day at 10.
So we'll actually be staying, technically staying at this hotel for
a day and a half,
right?
More or less. Well, actually, it's 24 hours, but we're getting a two-day, two-night rate, which is completely fine.
Right, which is fine.
We wanted they told us they want to make sure that we get there early in case there's any issues.
And we had to work with a recommended hotel.
Right. They set it all up.
That's limited because of Buenos Aires. The virus is still very prevalent there, and things are much stricter there. So we had to follow the protocol with that.
Right. And the name of the company is Travel Line. And they said, you know, we work with the consulate, the U.S. consulate all the time. And this is the kind of the recommendations that we have had over the last four
months.
They've
been very systematic. Everything you've shared with me, what they're doing, which is very reassuring for me that it's so organized and so buttoned up. I feel good about that.
So 19-hour drive, get to the hotel at 5 a.m. Our flight doesn't leave until the next day at 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. So 24 hours at the hotel, more or less. Then we get to the airport. We have a 13.5-hour flight from Buenos Aires to Amsterdam.
13 hours.
So then,
but wait, there's more.
There's more. When we had booked the flight, initially it was scheduled to leave at 8:50 at night, but got moved up until 10 a.m. in the morning. So all of a sudden, we lost our very short layover of like 3 hours in Amsterdam.
In Amsterdam.
And
so
it turned into a 13-hour
layover.
There's
that number again, another 13-hour stretch.
So 19, 24, 13.5, 13, and then a two-hour flight
and
from Amsterdam.
A couple hours.
To Edinburgh.
In Edinburgh.
So we leave at 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. on Monday morning, local time.
Yes.
We arrive in Edinburgh at 6 o'clock
Thursday
in the evening.
And that is our journey. That is our anticipated plan for journey. Of course, we will be sharing with you
as we move throughout that journey.
Through the process via, you know, our Facebook page and that. But then the podcast, no doubt, will talk about
that
how this all went. So please, everyone, so cross your fingers and toes for us sure. that everything goes smoothly and that we make it as planned in Scotland.
And that we still love each other.
And that we still care for each other after all of this.
It's going to be a fun one.
Mm-hmm. But, John, it's an adventure.
It is. We're going on an adventure.
That's right.
Okay, let's get into this amazing story.
Yes.
I'm not hyping this. This is an amazing story. It's a personal thing. It is pretty amazing.
I felt, I would say, probably a third of what you felt. As far as what you're going to talk about, as far as, it being so kind of transformative and supernatural for you. I felt, we'll get into it. Okay.
So real quick, kind of leading up to that moment, we spent 3 months in the Maya Riviera, and we went to several different Maya ruins,
mm-hmm.
and we were captivated by them. It was magical. A lot of very interesting things came out. I am a documentary filmmaker and have made 2 documentary films on UFO-themed subjects and working on a third one. So I was curious about the relationship to the sky people.
Which you would ask everywhere we went to Chichen Itza.
And every single person that we spoke to, with the exception mm-hmm. of one, told us that there's
their eyes would light up, and there was no hesitation, right. Absolutely. They were aware of and had heard of it through their families yes. and, you know, ancestors.
And most of our
down.
Guides that we were with were Mayan.
Right.
So these are oral history stories mm-hmm. that have been shared through generations. So I was always interested in that. And it was interesting, too, because every single time I brought that up, it took them off of their script. You know, their traditional, you know, storytelling script. And
that's
it would
true.
Kind of go down a different path. Not everybody was as forthcoming as our guide at Chichen Itza. So Chichen Itza was the last Maya temple that we visited.
Yes, it was.
In the Yucatan. We were in Tulum, Playa del Carmen area for 3 months.
Right.
Then we went to Merida for 1 month. And during our Merida trip, we took a weekend little
excursion,
jaunt.
Yeah.
It was a one-day thing.
Yeah, that was a one-day.
So we went to Izamal first, the Yellow City, and that was really cool. There was an old Maya temple there,
which we walked up.
Not much left to it.
Yeah, it's pretty unassuming.
But it was big.
Compared to some of the other places we'd been to.
But it was pretty darn big. It was a huge temple.
Yeah.
But Izamal was an amazing little side trip. And then we spent a lot of time there. I have a tendency to take a lot of photos, and therefore,
which you'll be able to see more of on the website when it's completed.
So it's a little bit of a slower go private trips with tour guides. And we usually do private trips, and we've mentioned this before, is because we prefer to have that one-on-one attention.
It's a more quality experience. Yeah, more connected. But you always warn the guides that,
yes.
just so you're aware, I'm an amateur photographer. I love taking photos. So if it's okay, I will be stopping and hesitating quite a bit to do that.
And also I let them know that I'm going to ask a lot of questions.
Right.
So we spent more time there than we were supposed to originally. So
we've eaten into our day.
So our guide was like, well, we need to hurry up because Chichen Itza closes at 5 o'clock.
And I don't think we were aware of that in advance, that there was that time window.
It wasn't too far away, and we got over there around 3.
Yeah,
and
it really
remember
was,
it wasn't that crowded, which was kind of cool because it was later in the day. Most of the buses arrived first thing in the morning. So when we got there, there were no, parking lot filled with buses.
Oh, no, I remember that being a very big deal. And her and the guide mentioning that. And I was excited because she was like, this is very unusual for it to be as quiet as it is right now.
So she hands us, she can't go into the grounds because they need, you know, the guides are within the grounds of the archaeological zone.
Right. You have to work with them.
So you have to work with them. So she said, I'll see you when we're done.
Right.
So we go and get our tickets. We say we want to hire a guide. We get introduced to a youngish guide. He was probably in his late 20s, early 30s. And I'm forgetting his name.
No, that's terrible. But yeah.
Which is awful. Because, and I have it in my notes and I have it in, I think it's in WhatsApp. Because I've communicated with him since we were finished with it. But he was really cool. And he said, you know, he even said this too, is that this is great because there's really not that many people here. So we'll be able to, you know, take our time. And he said, it's about 2 hours that we'll be able to go through this and well, plenty of time. So we start to walk through the path, and anybody who has been there before, you don't see it right away. You don't see the Templo de Castile, which is the main temple that's there.
No, you're kind of pushing through.
So you kind of, we're walking through.
There were some vendors, I think. And
yeah, there were some vendors and stuff there.
As you kind of move toward.
Walk around a corner and then bam.
Bam.
You see it and it hits you.
Wow.
At least it hit us, the two of us. Like, I mean,
I think I gasped.
Yeah, it was. It was one of those things. Because the other ones that we had seen were like inside the jungle, a little bit rough around the edges.
Right, a little bit more nestled in, like you said, in the jungle. So it wasn't like one monument or one aspect would totally stand out on its own. Not the case with this main temple.
No, so it's like so cleared grounds, and you can see the main temple, you can see side temples, you can see the ball court, the poke-to-poke court, and there's a lot that you could see. So it was quite fascinating to see that all right away. It was overwhelming. So after that like initial overwhelming feeling, we just started the tour. And the guide kind of walked us towards, you know, he kind of like said, let's go towards the temple. And he was starting to share things about the temple. And it was, you know, the regular information that you're going to get on any about the history, about the things that were found there, about the artifacts, about the meaning, about the geometry. These are all things that you can, if you go there, you can experience. If you want to look it up, you can experience it. But while we were doing this, he shared one thing with us about clapping. So there was like this echo thing that you could hear it from, you know, he was standing and he clapped and you can hear the echo go all the way up to the top and it comes back, which was really interesting.
And what would that distance be? It's quite a bit.
Yeah, it was pretty far. It was at least 100 yards from where he did
so
that.
So he's
from.
Like, try this.
And the whole thing was like it was an acoustical thing
right.
So that when people spoke from up top, everybody could hear it. It was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was some conversation about what the purpose of that was. It was built in a certain way in the forest so that the people could hear it.
Oh, so after he did that, he and I were kind of off, kind of, you know, walked over a little bit, and we were chatting, just the two of us. And I wasn't totally aware. I mean, I was, you know, I saw that you were looking at the monument and just appreciating it, but didn't completely realize till after we talked later what you were going through.
When you guys walked away, you were probably maybe 20 yards away to my left, and I was taking photos.
Mm-hmm.
And
of course
just kind
you
of
were.
Looking at everything and just kind of being absorbed into it. And as I was standing there, and again, I was only about maybe 50 yards at this time away from the pyramid, the temple, that all of a sudden I felt like this strong vibration in my body. It resonated out. It was a strong resonation from my core out to my arms, out to my fingertips, down to my feet. And I almost fell down. I kind of got down on one knee and just was emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And I was overwhelmed by that and like goosebumps and like, what the F just happened to me? What was that? There was some sort of It was a vibrational thing. It was like, I don't
energetic.
Know if it was a message. I don't know what it was, but I have never in my life ever experienced anything like
nothing
that.
Nothing similar.
No, it wasn't that sense of, you know, sometimes when you see something, you're just kind of like, wow, that
right.
is so amazing. You get goosebumps.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't like that because I had already experienced that like 5-10 minutes ago when we first saw that. Then I was just kind of like just in awe of it, taking photos. And that happened to me. And it was, I'm getting goosebumps right now just talking about it. So I walked over to you.
I was like, are you okay?
Yeah.
What's going on? And I mean, I understood that it was a magical setting, but not to the degree that you were like struck from the core out, as you say.
Yeah, so I was, you know, I told Karen and the guide about it, and he made a comment about, you know, a lot of people have different mm-hmm. types of reactions when they come here, and said that a lot of people who are connected here come here and have very spiritual experiences. And he talked about an individual who retired from the States that now lives there, and he said he came down here to die here because he knew that he needed to be here.
Yeah,
it was very
interesting.
There
was something so unique about
very
this,
interesting story. But we continued to kind of walk around and learn about some of the amazing things about the pyramid, mm-hmm. about the geometry and how at the summer and winter equinox, spring and fall,
and the serpent structure that goes up, that goes up the side of of the pyramid, and how apparently the light casts a certain way, and it looks like the serpent
going down the pyramid.
And
people gather, thousands of people gather.
It's supposed to be a huge, huge deal.
To see this.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Ugh.
And that would be a very powerful
experience. I'm just, as we're talking about this, I'm just having a moment too. Like, just we're standing there, and it seems so enormous. Why was that? There was something about there being so much flat ground all around it. And like we said, when you first walk in, you don't see it, and you kind of come around the corner, and it's so prominent.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some, I'm same thing as we're talking about this. I can just put myself back in that spot, and I could have just stood there and looked at that pyramid for hours, like literally hours. Mm-hmm. There was something that was so special about it.
So I kept walking around and taking photos.
Mm-hmm.
And walked around from the front when we first walked in where I was to around the left side. And this was about 15 minutes later, still taking pictures, kind of listening to what the guide was saying, but more immersed in the photos. And it happened again, not as strong as the first time, but it was almost like a tuning fork. You know, I felt like my body was a tuning fork and I was getting pinged. And it was one of those things, again, it was just kind of like I stopped in my tracks and I'm like, what is going on? What is this? So it happened three times. The first one was very strong. The second one was about, I would say, half of strong and much shorter. The first one lasted like, I would say, 10, 15 seconds. The second one lasted half that. And then it happened one other time when I kind of like was walking toward the one of the other temples on the grounds, and I felt it like just happened just a little bit as I was walking away. But after those events happened, I turned to the guy and I said, I have to ask you. I said,
here
I told him what I do,
question.
I'm a filmmaker, and that I'm curious about the sky people. Well, for the next hour and 40 minutes,
it was all
until the place
that.
Closed and we were ushered out by the guards, all we talked
he
about
was, so
was the sky people.
To go there with this topic.
And he said, rarely do I get a chance to talk about this. Mm-hmm. This is not part of the guided tour. This is not what we're instructed to do.
But
he said, but
you asked.
Because you asked, I'm more than willing to go there and more than willing to talk about it. So he continued to talk for the entire time that we were there about all of these connections to the sky people. And if you aren't open-minded to some of these things, you're going to be like, okay, really? Come on. He said, for example, there is a strong belief that the pyramids in the Mayan temples, as well as the pyramids in other parts of the world, were time travel devices.
Ooh, there we go.
There is even oral history mm-hmm. of time travel people who showed up in that time from different
so
parts of history. So in the future, Napoleon supposedly was one of the people that appeared in the Mayan times at Chichen Itza.
Mind-blowing, right?
Mind-blowing. Another one that was the big one, and we learned this as we were walking around the grounds, and we went to the poke-to-poke court, which is the big ball field.
Poke-to-poke.
And that's an amazing structure. It's a he called it like the Super Bowl.
Yeah, of the all, great ball court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the poke-to-poke courts in that region.
Right.
It was
they
one of the biggest
from,
ones ever
yeah.
made.
Other areas to
and poke to poke is a ball
there.
Game where there is a ball that is a little bit smaller than a soccer ball that is the goal is to get the ball through a hoop. It's like a basketball, you know, hoop, but it's turned at a 90 degree angle, and you can only hit it. You can't touch it with your feet. You can't touch it with your hands. You can only use your knees and your shoulders and your body to move the ball. And the hoops are pretty high up the wall. And this was huge. We had seen a couple of other ones that were much, much smaller. But this stadium was massive. But what was most fascinating about the stadium was how perfect the lines were. Again, we're talking about a structure that was 1,000 years old.
Right, so the symmetry was so precise.
The symmetry was precise. Mm-hmm. There was like the pitch of the walls was like 8 degrees, 7 or 8 degrees leaning in a little bit. Mm-hmm. And on both sides. And if you went and stood next to it, it was like razor sharp all along the whole
thing. And he explained that, the pitch, the reason for that slight pitch.
The reason for the slight pitch, what they believed was for acoustics.
Yeah.
So because they were both on both sides pitched down like that, that it would create a sound that would go up and out because only the high-level people were allowed to go in and watch these.
That's so cool.
The commoners could be outside and they could hear it. Again, fascinating that all of this architecture was going on there. And another amazing thing about it is because this is in the jungle, they raised the entire platform that this complex was on 12 feet.
Right.
And had a drainage system underneath it that to this day, when it rains, mm-hmm. it drains
runs through
in a matter of minutes.
And keep in mind, too, that this is in the Yucatan Peninsula, where it is basically, what do they call it? How do they, it's sand, the sandstone? Mm-hmm. Or it's like the
limestone.
Limestone. So it's the crevices that create the open pools of water, the cenotes. Mm-hmm. So that's already happening geographically in that area. But then they created, like you said, they built the foundation above all of that. So right. There'd be the running water.
This, well, just the network, for drainage purposes.
Drainage,
it was all
and
about
the networks.
Drainage.
Yeah,
so if they didn't do that, and during the rainy season, they would be standing in a foot of water
right.
during
it
the heavy rains.
Flooded.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it was intentional that they built this incredible drainage
Very
system
crafty.
That still works today.
Yeah.
Fascinating. So then there was the Temple of the Bearded Man was at the end of the Poke-to-Poke court. And according to our guy, he said that is the oldest structure in that area. Mm-hmm. So he said that that one was about 1,000 years old. And inside of that structure, there's one of these, if you look at all the different types of, and there's what they call them estrellas, the drawings.
Right.
So they have all these type of like drawings in the limestone that are chiseled into the limestone,
right,
carved into the limestone,
into the stone.
That show this very distinct style of person. So when you look at them, if you looked at 100 of them, they all have a very similar style. But this one little, it was about maybe a foot and a half by a foot and a half, 2 feet by 2 feet, and it was a profile. And the profile of the person didn't look anything like any of the other faces that were there. It looked like a profile of Jesus Christ. You know, he was sharing with us, is like, why would there be a profile of Jesus Christ? Why would this be so different than everything else that was there? And he was like, you know, his whole thing again was like the possibility of time travel. So that was kind of like a wow thing too. And he said also that when the conquistadors came there, one of the things that the conquistadors did is ask the Maya if they believed in Jesus Christ. And one of their main purposes was to get them to convert. And when they discovered this one temple and they saw that face, they thought that they were lying to them because they said, this looks like Jesus. So you must know who Jesus is. And we don't know enough. And one thing we should preface all of this to say is that this is one person's story to us.
These are theories around this.
These are theories mm-hmm. that have been passed down through oral history within the local Maya
right.
that
we
lived there.
We can't know for sure. But
so this isn't like historical documented things. No. These are things that he shared about. He says, I have heard these from my grandparents and my great-grandparents.
Generations
who have passed mm-hmm. this oral history down to us.
Yeah.
So it was very mm-hmm. eye-opening. You know, just, and it made me kind of feel like we were having like we were drawn to be there, that we should, that yeah, we were there the at that point of time.
And working with that guide and all of it, it was definitely a, again, serendipitous moment.
It was pretty powerful.
A very interesting experience.
But so I have never experienced anything like that before.
Did you, what did you do afterward? How did you process, or what did you do with, you know, what you felt at Chichen Itza?
I just felt, you know, my, I guess my, the main thought that I had is that it was like a reminder of some sort that I had been there.
So you
that
feel
I had a connection to that. Okay, and I don't know.
So potentially a past life.
Past life, time travel, you know, and if you're do you believe in interdimensional, that where everything's happening
right,
simultaneously.
It's simultaneous, so.
So yeah, this is deep stuff.
Oh, I know, and you know, everyone's
and not just about our
this.
Typical travel stories and stuff like that. Yeah. But this was it was one of those moments in life that I felt it was I've never had anything happen like that before or since.
Okay.
It was very strong, very mm-hmm. powerful.
So I wonder what it'd be like if you went back.
Well, I have to go back.
Right.
I know that.
All right. So when not if when you go back, I wonder how that will play out for you.
And part of that in going back is that over the course of not only going there, because after we were there, we went to Mexico City, and then we were at Peru, and all of the additional conversations that happened
so
about
many.
Sky People only confirmed that there is an amazing story
insights.
To be told mm-hmm. about all these ancient cultures who believe that they had a connection to the star people.
There's definitely a thread there and a huge appreciation and potential interaction in some capacity with something galactic, something interstellar. I don't know how we can explain that, but I mean there's the appreciation as far as, you know, with the indigenous cultures, as far as, you know, deities and that, and the connection to agriculture and you know, the crops and praying and giving sacrifice to the various gods for their blessings upon, you know, the crops and mm-hmm. their well-being and all of that. So there was that aspect. But then there's also this sense of we've learned like a reverence toward something else, mm-hmm. something
but
metaphysical.
The most amazing thing about all of that, though, in Mexico, in the Yucatan Peninsula, in Mexico City, the Aztec tribes down, when we went further down to Mitla, all of them had a connection to this and talked about it.
That's what I'm saying. There was a thread.
In Peru,
all of
same
that.
Thing. Ecuador, mm-hmm. same thing. But the most amazing part about it was that they didn't look at that as the way that we do. It's like, oh my God, there might be space people
right,
out
aliens
in space,
out
aliens,
there.
ETs. And something to fear, they were very accepting of it.
Almost
and everybody
integrated.
That we talked about it mm-hmm. said that it was just accepted. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Ooh.
So that's it.
Yeah. So
there's more to it, but I'm just like,
well, right.
That's
travel
my travel story.
Are you tingly right now? Are you getting a Chichen Itza tingle?
I think you can tell that I'm a little bit excited. I'm
yeah.
a little amped up.
Yeah. Maybe you should like do some additional research or do some, you know, I don't know, a meditation on Chichen Itza and see what comes
yeah,
through.
See what comes through.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty
and
powerful.
Speak to your Maya ancestors and yeah. see if they have something to share with you.
I don't. This, again, another discussion for another time. But I don't think it was a past life.
No,
I think it was dimensional.
It
I really do think it was a dimensional experience.
Wow.
So.
Okay.
Wow.
Then.
Wow. Some people are like, well, I'm not listening to these two anymore.
Okay, they're kind of freaks. All right, they just went into some weird territory. No, we're still grounded. We're still very grounded, but open-minded. And I think that's a big part of travel anyway, is, just allowing for some alternative.
Serendipity.
And some serendipitous moments, but alternative theories
thought.
And ideas
yeah.
around some of these
yeah.
things, especially when we're talking about deep historical places.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ancient cultures. And, yeah, there's things that we have to allow ourselves to open up our minds a bit about that.
And I think the big takeaway from that is don't be afraid to ask those questions, because every single guy that we've spoken to, with the exception of one, so we're talking about probably 20.
That's right.
All talked about the connection to the sky people.
Mm-hmm. So would that be a travel tip?
Yeah, talk.
Travel hack.
Talk to the guides.
Yeah,
that's one of the things that I would say that we have done every single time is when the tour, and when we've done a tour with a group of people, and usually I don't think the biggest group we've ever had was more than 15, 20 people, I always ask the guides. I will always stay behind and ask them questions. And it usually turns into a 10, 15 minute, sometimes half hour discussion. And you just get more information. You know, I look at it as like, while I'm there, I want to learn as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
So I ask a lot of questions.
And honestly, they, like you said, there's been a couple exceptions, but almost always they're kind of excited to go there and to take the conversation off script, as you called it, because otherwise things are fairly rote for them. So this allows them to kind of dig a little deeper and share things in a way that they don't normally get to.
Yeah, like our guide in Mexico City was an archaeologist, and
he
was fascinating. And it was more historical. He gave us so much history about what happened there. But at the very end, I asked the question, and he told me about his UFO sighting experience with his father.
Oh, so cool.
And the connections. It just was...
Yeah.
It's unbelievable when you start to ask those questions, whether it's about ufology or the things that aren't talked about all the time as part of tours, when you kind of dig a little bit deeper and you're one-on-one with them, they're going to share a little bit more.
Indeed.
So if you like this episode, please hit subscribe, follow us, leave a comment, share with your friends and family. We enjoy telling our stories. You know, you kind of can tell that we kind of get into it sometimes when we're doing this. It's a lot of fun for us.
Yeah, it's fun to reminisce about the things that we've already experienced. And now I'm super excited that we can be sharing new things closer to real time as we're experiencing them, keeping things current.
Fingers crossed there will be no more COVID isolation, restriction, lockdowns for us. Can you high five on that?
Okay, high five. Wait, let me use my antibacterial gel before I touch your hand. Perfect.